Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's, man, I'll tell you, I got a special guest today, a guy that I've been on Fox many times, on Varney, but he finally agreed. I begged him, I whined, I finally got him to come on, and it's my friend D.R. Barton from Smart Trade Pro, among other things. He's basically a financial genius. D.R., welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for being on, Todd. With the build-up like that, I will have to take a financial genius with a grain of salt, but always great to be on with you on the on Varney, and it's a treat to be with you here. And you didn't have to beg too much. You just had to run me down to be able to get me on the show.
Nah, you're a tough guy to get, man. You guys, you know, with all the brains, you know, I mean, what the hell? You Virginia Tech, you're a Hokie, and all, I mean, that's one of my teams, too, right? Blacksburg, Virginia, baby. So anyways, D.R., tell us a little bit about you and what you do. I mean, you've been an analyst for 26 years in this business. So take us through some of the things you look at and what you're doing.
Yeah, well, you know, I started out as a chemical engineer. That was my Hokie background. I worked for DuPont for 15 years and got to take a very early retirement, which was wonderful, just to pursue my love of the markets. And so, you know, I started out as a futures trader way back in the 80s, and I just traded my own account, and, you know, was kind of a hobbyist while I was working. And then when I got to take the early retirement, I really got serious about things and met some great people in the industry, and wrote a book, wrote a New York Times best-selling book with a couple of my friends, and been run a hedge fund for about 15 years, and now I get my trading itch by still trading my own account, still help to run the hedge fund, and write a newsletter or two for some folks. So just kind of all over the financial space with all kinds of things, just, you know, 24/7 breathing it, drinking it, eating it, and kind of like you, just loving it every day.
I've been doing this. I started as a floor trader in 1980, and obviously there is no floor anymore, so now I'm just a screen trader, and I'm an educator, and I, you know, obviously do a lot of other things. So tell us about Safe Strategies for Financial Freedom. I know that's your bestseller, so let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, it was a book that came out and talked about, you know, a bunch of things to do right before, right in between, to be honest, right in between the big dot-com bubble bursting and right before the real estate bubble bursting, and how to do some things that the traditional trader doesn't even think about, you know, how to look at potentially shorting a stock, things that Joe and Jane Sixpack don't think about, you know. And we also had some things in there about how to safeguard yourself against real estate problems, which was pretty much prophetic. The problem with buy and hold index fund investing for the long haul, and that, you know, you can certainly do that with some nest egg money, but that you have to have a way to be a little bit more agile, as we see in the markets today with two, you know, 50% pullbacks in the last 15 years, in the broader markets. You've got to have some money that's a bit more agile than that. So that's sort of the gist of the book, how to do some things that will protect you in those big down markets.
Okay, now, do you believe, I'm a big options guy, and I do, I have a lot of hedging strategies that help lock up a portfolio and take out the volatility and the risk. Are you a believer in things like that?
Oh, sure. I do some options trading and do some recommend some options trades. And I think the key in that market is to have a reason to be in there. You do it for some hedging so that you can play off when your portfolio is not running the right way, so you can get some. It's a more sophisticated way than diversification, as I like to call it. And I think, you have to have a strategy. Most of the pros like you that I know that use options, you know, they either are buying and selling at the same time, doing some sort of spreads or other things to mitigate their downside risk, or they're using really, you know, a short-term strategy so that they're not always holding that melting ice cube that options can be. You know, majority options players just buy a directional play, don't really have a good feel for how those options decay over time and have a tough time playing that three-dimensional chess game. When you throw that third dimension of time into a trade, you're not just looking at price. That really messes up a lot of, newer traders. So to have a strategy, I'm only going to be in this thing for X amount of time and get out then, win, lose, or draw, or I'm going to sell some options against the premium I'm buying so that I can mitigate my downside that way. You've got to have some sort of strategy, but I believe that type of options trading can be very profitable and successful, you know, with the right game plan.
Yeah, well, we don't take a trade unless you're getting a credit. We don't make those kind of trades, right? We understand the time decay model. Of course, that was my background. I started at the CBOE, so I've done it. I've traded everything across the world, but I know you also do some education. You do a in Delaware 12-year-olds economic Olympiad thing competition. Is that what that is?
Yeah, I taught many years taking teams to the Meaningful Economics Competition. It's a statewide competition for 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th graders, Todd, where we talk about supply and demand curves and marginal propensity. I mean, they have this big test they have to take. They have to make a presentation on a product and really enjoy that. And it's just amazing how much kids that age can soak up and understand.
Now, see, it's amazing how much you and I have in common, because I teach at the high school level. So I do the same thing at the high school level. But unfortunately, sometimes that's late, and I think that's a big thing that many of us miss, DR, and especially with some of the things you do, is the education and the financial literacy at all ages, because I think the tendency is to get trapped in markets because you don't understand, and I think that happens to a lot of people. Don't you agree?
Oh, I really agree, and so many people come out and, you know, go through what we would call a classic education and don't have any idea about how markets really work and, how this thing is not a one-way ticket. It's an auction market, so sometimes people get excited and push things too far to the upside, and sometimes they get too scared and push things too far to the downside, and we have to realize that, you know, the psychology of what's going on out there and how to be able to be prepared to either live through it or have a strategy to get out of the way of the freight train when it's coming our way. And, you know, just with a few simple tools, people can really understand how to manage their money a whole lot better.
Oh, yeah. And that's a real key, DR. I mean, you know, we know that the average, and it's happening right now in front of yours and my very face, is the average American or the average trader or investor is now starting to get a little greedy. They're starting to put things in markets that they probably don't belong in, and maybe over leveraging a little bit. And those are all very dangerous things that happen to investors, because the truth is that if you don't know what to do, if something goes wrong, you end up in problems. But we're going to get ready to step out here for a break, and we're going to come back with more from DR. And DR, when we come back, we talked a lot about, you know, some of the education things, but what I want to know from you when we come back is, well, how do you think the Fed is done, and what you're an engineer, which is a whole nother animal altogether, because you guys are all rule-based and all that stuff. It's really cool and really good at it. So I want to know, well, how do you think the Federal Reserve is done? Do you think they've done an adequate job? And we'll get that question when we get back from the break. We're listening. We're with D.R. Barton from Smart Trade Pro. Again, love to have him on. You see him on Varney all the time and a number of other shows, but he's really solid and really has a great feel for the markets. But we're going to step out here for a break. Make sure that when you miss an episode, you go to libertytalk.fm and download the podcast every day. We get about 225,000 downloads a month. We're trying to get to 300,000, so I need your help. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Bubba Average Joe, and we'll get you DR's Twitter handle when we get back. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be back right after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's an exciting day here. We have our friend D.R. Barton, who you've seen many times on Varney. He's from Smart Trade Pro. He's an engineer. He's got a lot of good qualities that make a lot of trader. And of course, one of the things I've always said is engineers, if you can get them to, if you can get them the right rule base, they make great traders. But DR, I asked you a question before we went to break, and I want to know your opinion of the Federal Reserve, the job they've done, and what do you think they'll do next?
I think to look at the job the Federal Reserve has done, the burden that was placed on them back in the 2007-08 into March of 2009 crisis, I think was overwhelming, and they reacted with fury and didn't know when to stop. I mean, to be honest, I think what has happened in the simple terms that I would tell my third and fourth graders is they basically kept piling money into the system until they drove up the price of risk assets, of stocks and real estate. They drove prices back up using non-created money, money that didn't come from a manufacturing or service base, but was just basically, we say printed, and that's not really the case, but it's a visual that people can understand. They really put liquidity into the system, and they did not know when to pull back on that lever, because we never really got the quality of recovery that would give economists and financial people peace of mind. The reason it has kept going on is because a lot of people, the big banks, the big brokerage houses, because people were driven into the stock market, have really reaped the reward of all of this extra liquidity. But I'm sure, Todd, you have family like I do that are looking for sources of income, and they can't find it in any of the traditional places that our moms and dads did. They can't open a bank account. They can't do a CD. They can't get any return from bonds, because all of that stuff has been driven down so low. The only place they can go is to try to find a dividend stock or an REIT or something like that that's throwing off extra money with a lot of extra risk. And I think, therefore, or the Fed gets a C minus in handling the financial crisis, and I think a D minus in not pulling up on the stick soon enough.
I'd give him an F, but that's because I was always in the fence, DR, and I could never make up my mind. But and I'm still not so sure they should have done anything in 08. Again, I know the reasons, but why did they let Bear Stearns and Lehman go out? Why was Jamie Dimon allowed to buy Bear Stearns for a dollar? There's a lot of quirky things in there that bother me, but I won't trouble you with those things. I think they've done a pretty poor job, and especially lately, because if we go back to the supply-demand model, which you teach to your third graders and so on, I mean, they have really destroyed free markets and true price discovery because they are always underlying the market. And when was it their job? Where did it say in the Fed charter that they are supposed to worry about the day-to-day activity of the stock market?
I agree, and or the real estate market. We never really got to a price discovery point on real estate. We never did, and it's gone. It has moved back up. It was not to the levels that it was in 07, because we, or 05, let's be honest, because we couldn't get back there. Those prices were ridiculous because of all the problems that have been rehashed a million times with people giving bad loans to people who didn't qualify for them, and et cetera, the greed run amok, and greedy people taking advantage of that on both sides, both the buyers and the sellers. And, since then we had no idea where the bottom was in real estate. We probably got a pretty good idea of where the bottom was in stocks. When we dropped 58% in the S&P, I think that was probably about the right amount there. And then we've had since then, Todd, to your point, no price discovery. I mean, the market has just been ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk up, and when we got a 14% pullback earlier this year, people were acting like the world was ending. And it was a correction that was long, long, long overdue, and I think that your concept that the Fed just really has made a market that's not true free market is spot on.
Now, we talk about this all the time, DR, and we talk about markets and how they work, and you teach that to third graders, but you mentioned something earlier about providing liquidity, and that was what the Fed is supposed to do, but the truth of the matter is, is although interest rates are at record lows, the liquidity to the average guy has not been, has had no access to liquidity. So where I guess if you remember Clara Peller from, you know, Wendy's, where's the beef? Where's the liquidity? We don't really have any, do we, or am I wrong?
Well, it didn't trickle down to the retail borrower, and that was the problem, because what happened was the pendulum swung way too far to easy credit for anybody that wanted it, especially in the real estate market. But you know, in other endeavors where people were looking to take on debt to do something, to start a business, to grow a business, whatever. And so the banks, it was like they were fed a bunch of warheads that the kids eat. You know, their mouths all puckered up tighter than a drum, and they weren't willing to spit out any of that cash that was being added to their balance sheets so that they could look better and feel better and make their investors more comfortable. At the same time, the credit worthiness bar got set so high that you're exactly right, that money was not being passed on to the public, and I think that's one of the big reasons that we have not seen a robust economic recovery after such a recession, because you know, the entrepreneurs weren't able to get their hands on that money as readily as they should have been because of that. You know, that double-edged sword, lots of extra money, but the banks all being told, well, you can't, you know, you've got to have better lending standards. And so they got tight as a drum, and exactly what you just described happened. It didn't flow out to mom and pop trying to start a new corner store, et cetera.
No, I mean, it's become very sad because, again, I mean, in my personal opinion, let me get your views here. I believe that the banks and the insurance companies are going to actually start to run into trouble here because, you know, they also make their money by investing elsewhere. You know, banks make it by lending, and they're not lending, and insurance companies make it by investing. And it's been very challenging. And where does it end? And how does this end in you with this whole Fed ordeal, dear?
Lots of talk about a soft landing and trying to manage our way out of this, and I think we've gotten just enough of a pullback from the recession, just enough, and I can't even call it economic growth, although our GDP is still expanding. I get all of that, but we've gotten just enough so that as the Fed, you know, quit doing anything and has had one 25 basis point rate hike, the market has not responded negatively to that. As a matter of fact, I think what we've really had happen since the big pullback in February, and Yellen et al., well, I won't say et al., it's not all of them, but Yellen and the majority of the Fed governors have taken on a more dovish posture, and many people even guessing that we won't, or predicting that we won't have an interest rate for the rest of the year now. You know, the problem is that we have to unwind this liquidity somehow. We can't just keep all of this money on the balance sheets, on the Fed's balance sheet, and go back to business as usual without addressing it. So there's got to be some reversal of that. And I don't think the global economy is robust in any way, shape, or form enough to be able to bleed it off over 5 or 10 years. I think we're going to have a reckoning of some proportion when we get the right set of externalities. Let's call it of external movement. China growth continuing to drop, combined with the currency problems we're having, and if we can't reverse the deflationary forces that are coming out of the commodity world, you know, we could have a real 2008 reckoning if we get that kind of perfect storm. If we get some luck and some proper central bank movement, we might be able to survive with a 20-30% pullback instead of a 40-50%. But, you know, the reckoning's coming, Todd. It certainly is.
It is coming. This is D.R. Barton from Smart Trade Pro, and you see him on Varney, and you see him all over the place. place, and you can tell he understands the market. At least he understands the market to my satisfaction, which is the way we always try to talk about on the show here, because we do believe in the free market society. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the podcast every day. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with more from D.R. Barton. The Bubba Show.
I know where I come from.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and I'm with, again, a very special guest, D.R. Barton. He made me chase him. It's like I'm trying to chase a date, but he finally agreed to show up. And D.R., you know, you own Smart Trade Pro. You're involved, and you've got a newsletter, Stealth Stock Trading Indicator, and a couple other things. Tell us about some of the products you do have.
Yeah, well, the newsletter is called Stealth Profits with the plural, because there's more than one Stealth Profits Trader. You can go to stealthprofitstrader.com for more info on that through my great publisher at Money Morning, Money Map Press. They do a great job of getting this out there, and it's a shorter term trading service where I'm making buy and sell calls, 2 to 3 times a week. So that's my newsletter back end at Smart Trade Pro. It's like you say, Todd, we're both in the education business, and that's a seminar arm and coaching, trading, investing coaching arm that I have. And you can go there and look and see what we're doing at smarttradepro.com and the things that we're doing there teaching-wise. So that's a couple of the things. I'm working on another book that's going to come out before the end of the year, and, doing all kinds of fun things with the folks over at Money Morning. Got a new e-letter that'll be starting up in about a month and a half, and so maybe when that gets rolling, I'll come back on and we can talk more about that, because I'm going to be doing some really innovative video blogging for people, some vlogging.
I better start chasing you now if I want to get you back by then. It might take me forever. So, DR, we see markets, and of course, as a floor trader, I was more naturally a bearer, just because you're always selling into who is ever buying, right? You're making a market. But one of the things that bothers me about markets is, Goldman Sachs on Monday came out with a call on oil, and they say, well, it's going higher. It's going to 50. And I say, BS. I say that oil is going to go lower now because Goldman Sachs is actually reverse pumping, or they're reverse spoofing the market, because they believe the markets are going lower, just like when they called for 20 and they were looking to be buyers. That's how I look at Goldman Sachs and those guys, because that's what they did forever. As a floor trader, I have experienced them firsthand. So I don't know that for 100% fact, but that is my actual honest belief, because they do this all the time. This is not the first time that they're going to make a call, and you'll find out later that they're on the opposite side of the market. Do you have any thoughts there, or do you care to comment?
Well, I, I know of many floor traders who made a living fading, as you call it, you know, what the big institutions are doing. You're fading the paper flow coming in, right? That, because that was your job and you learned how to make a living at it. And, you know, I think there is obviously some gamesmanship when people come out with big calls, especially like this one. They had the call for 20. They had the call for whatever it was, you know, $200 several years ago when it was on the climb. And, you know, will people do that in order to get a preferential price for themselves? Well, I can't say that, you know, because I have no proof. But, you know, like you say, there are usually these firms that have the, you know, they have such brain power working for them, Todd, as you and I both know. They're thinking 3, 4, 5, 8 moves out on the chessboard. And so, you know, all of those things can happen. And I'm with you on the oil call. I think they're talking about the supply curve being over, or the oversupply being over. I think we're a long way from that. Iran hasn't got up to snuff. You know, we have been dropping off the less productive wells here in the U.S. for, you know, 18 months now, going on 24, and, you know, we just have fewer and fewer wells pumping more and more oil, so that we've only dropped about 600,000, 700,000 barrels a day from the peak back, you know, back last summer. So it's interesting that all of these things calls for, well, the supply glut could be over. You know, all it takes is for price to get up here and start sniffing 50, and I think we're going to see another big downturn, like you suggest.
Well, I mean, I agree. Look, again, the bottom line is we know that magically supply disappears when there's not enough, when there's too much of it, and magically demand comes when we create a shortage. You know, this is not anything new. I mean, you know, we have the truth, the facts of the matter are, is that the United States of America, without disturbing anybody, we have over 100-year supply of fossil fuel that we can get to easily. So, you know, there's always going to be an issue. Well, as always happens, they shut down when they get too much, and then they, you know, they wear it down, and then they run it back up. So, you know, it's a simple process, and it's just an understanding of really the technical parts of the market. Now, are you a technical trader? Is that what you're looking at? Is that how you read the markets, or are you also fundamentals involved as well?
Well, I'm probably about 80-20. I'm about 80% technical, 20% fundamental. And, you know, I always like to think about that third leg of the stool, sentiment, because I do keep an eye on some sentiment indicators that I follow very closely, look at every day. You know, how many stocks are trading above or below their 50 or 200, you know, things like that, breadth of participation in the market. I keep my eye on those. So I'm not, you know, really trying to throw 17 different things into the market mix, but I do keep my eye on the fundamentals and watch a lot of that closely, because, you know, I do believe that that Graham was right when, you know, Buffett quoted him, that in the short run, in the long run, the market's a weighing machine. So the weight of what's going on out there will win in the long run, but in the short run, it's a voting machine. It's an auction. So we could go anywhere while getting to that end point. So I kind of like to keep my eye on that, but my you know, my real trading decisions are informed in the short term by the technical side, no doubt.
Right. I mean, I tell people, if you're an investor, find a stock you like because of its fundamentals, but don't buy it or sell it until it technically tells you that it's time to do so. Because, you know, why should you overpay or short or sell it too soon when certainly the market leaves a definite footprint? We both agree on that. And you're much better off waiting for the footprint to give you the answers, because that will give you a much better shot and will help increase your overall take. Is that not true?
Oh, I agree completely. One of the things that I say often, I know you've heard me say it on Stuart's show, is, yeah, you know, you find the stock you like, and then you buy it. You accumulate it on pullbacks. Don't buy the breakouts. I think unless you're in a stock that's really on a rampage and there's just no other way to get your hands on it, I think almost every investor would be well informed to, you know, buy stuff on a 3, 4, 5% pullback. When you get those nice pullbacks, pullbacks, you can just buy it on sale over and over again instead of buying the breakouts and having it, you know, having it work 3-5% against you right after you put some money in it.
No, I agree. Again, I agree. You know, again, it's not a hard game. It does take some, you know, it takes a little bit of, you know, pressure once in a while. I mean, the market doesn't always go exactly the way you think it's going to go. But, you know, again, that's why you use discipline to get in and out, and you make sure that you're always protecting your money. I mean, that's the key. It's to protect the bottom line, and sometimes things do change. But that's the opportunity of being prepared to get out of the market if you're wrong, or to move on. So, dear, what are you looking at now? What are you seeing overall? What's your short-term view here?
Well, one of the things that I'm watching, and then I've got a question for you on the back end of this, Todd. We talk about an individual stock that everybody knows. I have an interesting thought there. What I'm looking at right now, what I've been concentrating on over the last couple of weeks, is that this market, or let's say almost a month now, we've been almost 2 months in this tight sideways band. If you look at the S&P 500, it's a 70-point band. You know, that we go from the lows to the highs and the lows to the highs, and we get 2 days up, 3 days down, 3 days up, 2 days down, and you know, just bouncing back and forth. And I'm trying to let some of the sector rotation thoughts guide me as to where I think we could go next. And it's interesting because as we fight this sideways battle, at the very very beginning of it, utilities were getting pummeled. You know, they did great. They were the big winners early in the year when everybody else was going down. They were the big relative winners, let's say. And now over the past few weeks, they have or the past month, let's say, if we look at it, they're still climbing back. So I think the money is acting, to me, Todd, defensive right now. Stocks like Lockheed Martin, you know, just pick your favorite utility, they're all gaining ground, moving up. So the defensive sectors and defensive stocks where people would say are defensive oriented are gaining ground while everybody else is going sideways on average. So that's kind of what's guiding my thought process right now.
Okay, and your question for me is?
My question. Here's an interesting thing that I was looking at today. So, Icon came out and said I've sold my Apple shares 2 weeks ago. And Apple, after that was the day after earnings, and they just got continually pummeled after that. And now our big trading friend, Mr. Tepper, says that he's unloaded $133 million worth of stock in their latest filing, and Apple has not responded as negatively. It had a little drop, and now it's come back a couple of days. I'm wondering if, you know, we have seen sort of the bottom of the short-term fear-mongering on Apple.
I will answer that when we come back from the break. This is D.R. Barton from Smart Trade Pro, as well as Self Trading. Give me the words, the name, Rogan.
Self Profits Trader.
Self Profits Trader, because I'm looking at this Self Trading Indicator. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, with D.R. Barton. Make sure when you miss an episode, LibertyTalk.fm will allow you to download and listen to the show every day. And, of course, we always have a lot of fun here on The Bubba Show because you know me. I go crazy and get into some pretty good battles. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with D.R. Barton after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with D.R. Barton from Smart Trade Pro and a couple other newsletters, and you can check him out with his, the name is Stealth Profits Trader. Check him out. He's obviously a very, very bright guy, and again, always fun to have on, and I love watching him on Varney. Sometimes I throw a rock at the TV set, but it's always good to have him on and watch him. All right, so he asked me about, do I think that the mongering is done in Apple? I do think so. I mean, in fact, it's funny you asked that, DR, because I was just in Las Vegas, and I've got a friend of mine who never traded much before that's extremely successful and has decided that he needs a new challenge in life, so he wants to be a little bit more involved in the market. So we played some stocks, and, you know, he's done fairly well with what he picks, and he came in with Apple when it was 100, and I said, you know what, let's wait. I think Apple for sure is going to go back and retest that, you know, that August 24th low for the second time. You know, it went down there once in 92 area. I think I said I'd like to be a buyer somewhere in the 90 area. Okay. And see, so sure enough, it got down in that area and we did buy some. And of course, I do think that the low is in. I think that a lot of times, I think what people forget to realize is that markets themselves and stocks themselves will make moves well ahead of the general market. But that's just a warning sign potentially that there may be things amiss. But I believe that Apple, most likely, unless we get just some kind of major cratering effort here, that Apple's probably saw or seen the near-term low. And I don't expect to see a lot of pressure on Apple from this point forward, unless there's just, you know, another event of like an August 24th or something like that. But under normal circumstances, I think that Apple is probably pretty solid here because they priced in the Tepper. They priced in the Icon. You know, again, as you said way in the first segment, is sometimes in the auction market, they tend to overbid or oversell at any given time. And I think they might have pushed that level a little bit on Apple. So that would be my answer to you. I do think that Apple's probably a reasonable play down here. I mean, fundamentally, sure, it's solid. It's a hell of a lot better here than it was the first time we got the 700 in 2012 and they had a special ticker for it.
No, that's for sure. That, you know, that's that kind of sentiment, thought process of when has the auction gone too far, and I think you made a really good point, Todd, that you know Tepper's selling didn't happen Friday when the announcement was made. That what they were getting, he was filing a report for his fund, and they had sold. So over this whole period of time, probably the last few weeks, they have sold off that. They didn't just dump it all on the market in that one day. So the news flow certainly it is not coincident with the trading that's going on there. And I think that could well mark at least a short to intermediate term bottom in the stock.
Yeah, I would, again, I don't have any problem with it. I mean, I think, look, it's a solid company. If you're a fundamental guy, it's a 10 or under in a P.E. ratio. I mean, I'm not, but and the bottom does look like it held. And, of course, we did get a nice little bounce and certainly not a problem. So, DR, as we go into the summertime here and we go into the election season, we both agree that the Fed has not done exactly a great job and we have not really seen any growth. I mean, I don't care who nobody can tell me that there's any growth anywhere because we're not creating jobs. I don't care what they say. 240,000 jobs or 190,000 jobs does not cut it, especially when most of them are $9 an hour jobs. It just doesn't cut it, which is why we're seeing such a tragic ending in the brick and mortar retail, because it's just, you can't compete anymore. They're basically out of business because the average American has no money to spend extra, because if you're paying for kids in college like I am, I mean, my kids' tuition is over $100,000 a year for my kids in college. So it's hard to say that I'm going to have some excess money to spend no matter how cheap gas gets or whatever. What do you think?
Well, I think the bricks and mortar stores are they're not buggy whips, and we can. I'll give you a couple of different examples here of what's going on in the great rotation there. You know, that money is being sucked into online. You know, Amazon. You look at their numbers, whether or not they're turning out earnings, and we could have a whole show where we talk about what Amazon's doing and what Bezos has been doing for 16 years. But let's look at since 99 to now, I think Amazon's they went from selling $10 billion a year to over $100 billion a year. So that, where's all that retail money going that used to go to Macy's and and the stores that are struggling with their earnings over the past couple of weeks? You know, it's going online, and they're going to have to play a new game, and they're going to have to take a lesson from. I don't think Best Buy is the best run company out there, and it's not a place that I'd tell people to run and put some stock, to put some money into their stock. But you have to look at the model they've used. They've remained relevant even though everybody buys more stuff online than they buy at Best Buy. But people still want to go put their hands on stuff, and how can they turn that into sales Best Buy's outlived Circuit City, has outlived all the other big box stores that have gone by the wayside, because they found a way to stay relevant. And I think we're going to see the stores like Macy's be more, they're going to be downsizing, and we're going to get fewer of them, and you're going to have to go further to be able to put your hands on clothes to look at them and try them on. And that game is just going to continue. That game's going to continue to change.
And, you know, again, we see a lot of issues. Now, do you see a lot of issues in this overall economy? Are you concerned going forward? Are we ripe for a correction, in your opinion?
I think we're ripe for a correction. I think we're even ripe for a recession. You know, we're in a big earnings recession, Todd. This is the fourth straight quarter. Our year-over-year earnings have gone down. We haven't done that since the third quarter of 2009, since we were, you know, in the tail end of a real recession. I think an economic recession where we get contracting GDP, unfortunately, I don't think it's too far down the road. And I just think our trading partners are not strong. Canada is such a natural resource oriented market economy that, you know, they're getting really hurt by the low crude prices, and Europe has all so many troubles of their own. China's growth story, I think, is over for the near term, meaning 5 years. I think we're just going to keep finding people explain away why 6.7 seemed to be reasonable and like 7.5 used to be. China's not a growth story anymore, and I think all of that points to the fact that we're going to see some economic reckoning coming.
I think the reckoning is, the day is coming, but again, you can't predict, you can't pick tops and bottoms. You got to find the right answer. But DR, before we get ready to go here, somebody wants to reach out to you. How do they get a hold of you? What's your Twitter handle and information, how to get through to you if they need to?
Sure. Twitter handle at my initials, D like in Delta, R like Romeo, Barton _ stocks, DR Barton _ stocks. We'll get to my Twitter handle. You can reach out to me through smarttradepro.com as a way to send an email there, and we'll look forward to being on and chewing the fat with you again, Todd. It's an enjoyable experience, just like every time we're on Varney.
It is great, and we've got about a minute left here. So if you're going to tell the average investor who's maybe fully invested right now because they're chasing a yield, what would be your advice to be to them right now?
I think for the average investor, with my thought process over the next 18 months, that we're going to see a real pullback, that we're going to see a real bear market, which means a 20% drop. I think you've got to have an uncle point. You can't just say I'm going to buy and hold blindly, but you've got to have, especially on individual stocks that might rotate out of favor that were once good in your portfolio or in the hot sector that is no longer the hot sector. Where's my uncle point? How much am I going to give back? You know, things have gone up the one side of the Eiffel Tower. How far down the other side of the Eiffel Tower am I going to play so I don't get caught in a dot-com bubble or in a 2008 real estate bubble type of scenario? So find your uncle point, and cash is a position, Todd. It's okay to be in cash when things are not going well.
D.R. Barton, we thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure. D.R. Barton from Smart Trade Pro, thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd. It's great being with you.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. That was D.R. Barton from Smart Trade Pro, a great guest. Great to have him on. I love being out with him on Varney. If you ever miss an episode, all you have to do is go to libertytalk.fm and go to the Bubba Show. You will get it there. That will do it for today. We will see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Good night, everybody. Thanks.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.